I, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute
the office of President of the United States
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
Donald Trump will be the 45th President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief of America's Armed Forces, the most powerful position in the world. But who is Donald Trump? What's he really like? And what does he really believe? To find the answer, we're going back to his roots to tell you the story of the Trump family, from Donald's immigrant grandfather to his driven parents, his wayward brother, and his three wives. Once you've met the family Trump, you'll have a better idea of what Donald's about and what the man might actually do.
Meet the Trumps, from immigrant to president.
Let me tell you a story, the ultimate immigrant success story, the epitome of the American dream. How Donald Trump's grandfather, Friedrich Trump, left Germany in the 1880s, a penniless teenage barber, and made a small fortune in America. How his son, Frederick Trump, made an even bigger fortune, and how his son, Donald, became President of the United States. This is a story that is colorful, full of ups and downs, grit, resilience. It involves hotels, bars, prostitution, and run-ins with the law. And if you want to understand what makes the next President of the United States tick, who he really is, you need to hear this story.
Donald Trump's journey to the White House begins with his grandfather. Friedrich was the youngest son in a family of winemakers who lived in the small town of Kallstadt in Germany. In 1885, when his family fell on hard times, Friedrich left home in the middle of the night and headed to America.
Archive film of a ship.
Friedrich was just 16 when he jumped off the boat in New York, hoping to make his fortune.
Gwenda Blair.
Friedrich came to the U.S. with a suitcase, a single suitcase, didn't speak English, was very shrewd.
He began work as a barber in downtown Manhattan. New York was an extraordinary melting pot of immigrants, and Manhattan, a densely packed collection of slums. Friedrich Trump worked there for several years, building up a small nest egg. But in America, in the 1890s, the action was on the other side of the country.
A steam train.
He bought himself a train ticket for $35 and headed to Seattle, the Northwest Pacific Coast.
Frederick Trump arrives in Seattle. You know, it's filled with saloons, filled with card rooms. So there's gambling, fights, construction happening everywhere. And he goes straight to Washington Street, apparently. It's the toughest part of a tough city. People almost getting shot in the head when they open up an apartment door.
Aged just 23, Friedrich Trump employs two Italian chefs and takes the bold move of opening a restaurant.
So this right here is where the Dairy restaurant was. This was Fred Trump's restaurant. This is it. It's not much to look at now, some cracked asphalt. But back in 1891, this was the first successful Trump enterprise. Why did he come here? He came here because this is where opportunity was.
Rob Ketcherside.
It wasn't just sitting back in the office and counting the cash, because these were violent times. Even Friedrich's two Italian chefs fell out and ended up fighting in his bar.
He could have lost everything. He was gambling. Who knows if he can run a restaurant? He hasn't run a restaurant before. But he had big dreams that he was trying to fulfill.
Friedrich was making money, but not enough money. The real action was further north, and he decided not to stick, but twist.
He shows, first of all, that he has an eye for opportunity. And he has the gumption to get up, move. He understands also that when the economy turns, he's got to move on.
He hears on the grapevine that John D. Rockefeller, the richest man in America, is about to set up a mining concession in a place called Monte Cristo, also in Washington State. And he heads there.
Matt Fry.
It's a tough journey north into the mountains. Friedrich's plan was to build his own place, the very first Trump Hotel.
The neighborhood where Trump has his hotel is on the wrong side of the tracks, but it's the popular place. It's the entertainment place. It's where the men come in on Saturday night after a tough day working up in the mines, working in the woods. And they want to spend their money. They want to have a good time. There are girls. There are meals. Gambling is going on. One of the men who worked there described it as a hellhole. Definitely, it was not in the genteel part of town, not in the business area.
Then, in 1897, news broke that miners had struck gold high up in the Canadian Rocky Mountains. There were rumors that by the banks of the Klondike River, gold nuggets were being plucked straight out of the ground. And it was here that Grandpa Trump spied his next opportunity.
Winters in the Northwest are hard. Back there in the mountains, the snow is deep. Avalanches killed men. But Trump was a man who was not afraid to take those challenges, even though he was young and inexperienced in the mountains. So he backpacked all of his supplies when other men were sleeping in the streets to get into the bonanza and make something of him. And he did it.
Friedrich joins the miners in the brutal climb up the notorious Dead Horse Trail, so named because the horses were literally collapsing and dying by the side of the road. This gives Grandpa Trump a new idea for a pop-up restaurant. He turns the dead horses into lunch. He is now serving horse burger. Frederick Trump is literally flogging a dead horse.
Trump is a man who sees the main chance and he's able to take it.
By May 1898, Friedrich had run out of horses for his burgers, so he built a two-story hotel in the small town of Bennett. But just as he was up and running, the miners moved on. So what does he do? He takes the entire hotel, slides it down the mountain, puts it on a barge, and then sails the barge to Whitehorse.
A steam barge.
Unfortunately, he hits some class one rapids and the hotel disintegrates on the barge. But he picks up the timber, reassembles the hotel, plonks it right in the middle of Whitehorse on a piece of land that is prime real estate that he doesn't even own.
Now this is the last of the Wild West in North America. There's the tough guys and no law enforcement around. And Friedrich Trump is not a guy who's going to go out into these frigid, cold rivers and pan for little bits of gold. He has a better idea. He sells these guys drinks, he sells them food, and upstairs, well, he has sporting ladies, as they were known.
Yes, Friedrich Trump gets into prostitution as well. There are 3,000 miners who come to his hotel, the new Arctic Hotel, every single day. And if they can't pay with money, they can pay with gold or gold dust. Grandpa Trump was making a serious amount of money. But soon, with the drinking, the fighting, and the whoring, it all got out of hand. And the Mounties came into town and started closing establishments down.
He took that as a high sign to leave. Just as he had left Monte Cristo in the black, he left Whitehorse with a nest egg, figured out when to get there. He had a business plan, and then he left when it was time to leave.
The theme that runs through all the Trumps, the one thing they've never really forgotten, however much money they've made, however successful they've become, is restlessness. This desire to always move on, always find the next opportunity. It is a very American story in that way, and it's an unforgiving story. But it's the Trump version of that story. While thousands are struggling to survive, Frederick Trump is doing extremely well. Donald's grandfather now headed back to his hometown of Kaltstadt in Germany. But little did he know there was trouble waiting for him there.
My grandfather, Frederick Trump, came to the United States in 1885. He joined the Great Gold Rush. He did fantastically well. He loved this country. But you know what? I love Karlstadt also.
Karlstadt, Germany.
Donald sounds rather proud and patriotic about his grandfather, but what actually happened in Karlstadt is worth investigating. Here we are.
This is the scenic wine route of Germany. Beautiful vineyards and gingerbread houses. This is where it all started for Donald Trump. In 1901, Friedrich was back home in Germany, hoping to get married and start a new life. But it wasn't going to be so simple. This rather functional-looking building is the local state archive. And in its bowels is contained a document that reveals a rather inconvenient truth about Donald Trump's grandfather.
Okay. Nach ihm.
Friedrich needed to reapply for his German citizenship, as he'd been in America for over 8 years.
Das historische Dokument, ja.
What are we looking at here?
Letters from the government and from the city hall.
I can see the name Trump there. What does this letter actually tell us?
This is a letter written by the mayor of Karlstadt. The mayor asked the county commissioner in Dürkheim to give Friedrich Trump citizenship back.
So the mayor wants Trump
The mayor wants Trump back because
he's rich.
Because he's rich and he had a good reputation.
But they need the consent from the top level.
Of the Bavarian state, yeah.
Of the Bavarian state, which he hasn't got yet.
Yeah.
So let's move on to that.
85 ausgewandert ist, ohne Genehmigung und ohne seinen Militärdienst abgeleistet.
This is interesting. This is the key document where Trump is basically told by the Bavarian state government that he will not get Bavarian citizenship because when he left the country for the United States in 1886, he did so without their consent and without having completed his Bavarian military service. And therefore, they don't want to grant him Bavarian citizenship.
Friedrich wrote several letters to the Bavarian authorities, begging them to let him stay in Germany. Of no use. He received a final deportation notice from the Crown Prince of Bavaria.
So this is the final goodbye. No more appeals after this.
No.
On this document here, that the course of history ultimately hinges. Because without this document, there would be no Donald Trump president of the United States of America.
So Frederick Trump now leaves Germany with a deportation order hanging over him, but now with quite a lot of money, the money that he made when he first lived here during the gold rush. And then he does what Trumps have always done. He reinvents himself here in the United States.
He traveled with his new wife, Elisabeth Chris, a neighbor from Karlstadt from a poor background. Friedrich went back to his old profession and opened the barber shop on Wall Street.
I do think Friedrich was biding his time when he came back. He lived in what is essentially a tenement and cut hair in the neighborhood and made a little bit of a living. And when he saw his opportunity, he went for it.
It was over the East River Bridge in a new suburb called Queens where Friedrich decided to go into the property business.
Queens was just beginning to take off, but you wouldn't necessarily have grasped that this was where the future was going to be. But Friedrich was somebody who was able to take the long view.
Everything was going quite well for Friedrich. The one exception that I think has come to light only in later years was that he drank a lot. And this issue resurfaces later in the Trump family saga.
Prone to booze or not, Friedrich was an industrious man. By 1918, his net worth was around $500,000 in today's money. And he and Elizabeth had 3 children, including Donald's father, Fred.
Friedrich could have been very big in Queens in real estate, but unfortunately for him and for his family, died in the influenza epidemic in 1918.
Matt's in a snowy cemetery.
All the Trumps are buried in the cemetery. The first one was Frederick Trump, who died at the age of 49 leaving his widow Elizabeth and their three young children to fend for themselves. It also meant that his eldest son, Fred Trump, had an awful lot of responsibility thrust upon him.
Fred Trump was a chip off of the old block of his father. He was only 12 when his father died, but learned how to draw blueprints, was building neighbors' garages, and he was too young to have a bank account on his own as a business, so his mother had to incorporate as Elizabeth Trump and Son. The two of them began scouting out things, and he began to build houses.
Donald's father, Fred, built his first house aged just 17. Soon he would be in sole charge of the family business. Of these three men, Frederick, Fred, and Donald, people said that it was Fred, Donald's father, who was the really clever one. Over the next three decades, Fred took the business to a net worth of $200 million. A successful man, but he would later go on to be caught up in allegations of corruption and racism.
He was really good at what he did. He was a real professional. And I learned a lot just sitting at his knee, you know, listening to him from the time I grew up. And I just learned a lot about negotiating. I learned a lot about building. I learned a lot about business.
Fred was just 24 years old when he faced his first major business challenge. The American economy fell through the floor.
1929 stock market crash. Wayne Barrett, investigative journalist.
Desperation is the land they inherit and inhabit. Dark times are times of great opportunity for people of great stealth.
President Roosevelt announced his plan to save the economy. It included huge government funding for building programs.
Fred Trump was first in line in the New York regional office when that program was unveiled, and got going really quick out of the box with building large numbers of single-family homes and then eventually apartments.
It's a great irony that the Trump empire, as it was built in the 30s, was in many ways a consequence of great liberal policies. You know, he's the original state capitalist, milking every dollar that he can, all of it through political connections.
No doubt Fred used his friends in high places, but between 1935 and 42, he also built homes for over 2,000 families.
And now another immigrant enters the frame, Mary Ann McLeod, a pretty girl from the island of Lewis in the Hebrides, a remote, windswept and dirt-poor place.
Donald Trump's mother grew up in a crofter's cottage and spoke Gaelic as her first language.
Set the scene for us. The Isle of Lewis in the 1920s. What was it like?
There was mass emigration. Mary McLeod, Mary Trump as she became, was born in the village of Tongue in Lewis in 1912. Now, my own grandparents come from that village, my mother comes from that village, and they were part of that emigration generation. And of course, Lewis, like the rest of Britain and Europe, had been hit by the body blow of First World War. Lewis had a particularly bitter experience of losing a large number of men. So the pool of migration, the pool of the new world, away from the poverty and the tragedy of the early part of the 20th century Europe, was very strong. And Mary was part of that movement.
So what do we know about Mary McLeod when she gets to the United States? What does she do?
Mary went and obtained work as a domestic servant in upstate New York. She met this very handsome man, Fred Trump, at a dance. They obviously liked each other. They corresponded with each other.
So they came from different social backgrounds.
Absolutely they did. And the transformation is incredible. It is from domestic service to domestic goddess. It's almost F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's like something out of The Great Gatsby. She certainly was a striking beauty, but she had an inner confidence as well, I think. And I think that must have come shining through in her when she met Mr. Trump.
And some of it rubbed off on her son.
Undoubtedly, undoubtedly.
In 1936, Mary Ann McLeod married Fred Trump.
She was certainly spunky. I think she had ambitions that supported his ambition, and I think felt she had made a good bargain.
Let me ask you, Mrs. Trump, a little about your Scottish origins.
Uh-huh.
Where were you born?
In a little town called Stornoway, but the island of Lewis, way up in the Hebrides. grew up there, came to New York, met my husband, went back to Scotland, and came back to New York to get married.
Fred built Mary a mock Tudor house in Queens, the perfect place for their new family. And as well as being a wife and a mother, she became part of the Trump empire.
She was a woman who would wear a fur coat and ride in her Rolls Royce to go empty the coins from a washing machine that people put a quarter in to do their laundry in her apartment complex. But that was Mary. This was her idea of what a wealthy American woman must do. You go out in style, but you still collect those quarters.
By 1938, Fred Trump had built up an impressive property empire. The Daily Eagle dubbed him the Henry Ford of housing. Fred was becoming so big, he needed to work out how to manage his public persona.
He wasn't a spotlight-loving person himself. His daughter told me that he actually took a Dale Carnegie course once in how to win friends and influence people because he was so shy, he hated being up in front of people.
But it wasn't long before Fred embraced the hoopla. This is him promoting the Trump brand across New York. However, soon the Trump empire would get its greatest showman, joining a growing Trump family in Queens.
So this was the house, this mock Tudor thing, was the house where Fred and Mary Trump lived at the end of the Second World War.
And here, in 1946, Fred and Mary had their fourth child, weighing in at a fair few pounds. Enter Donald J. Trump. Donald Trump's father, Fred, made most of his fortune after the end of the Second World War. When the soldiers returned home, President Eisenhower announced a huge funding program to build homes for the veterans. It was music to Fred's ears.
It operated on the basis of the government's largesse, and he took this money hand over fist and was happy for it.
Fred's scam was simple. He asked the government for more money than he needed to build the houses and essentially pocketed the difference.
The key to it is to know the rules, the real rules, not the rules that the suckers play.
Fred needed excellent connections for his scheme, including with a regional official called Tommy Grace.
And he hired George Grace. Fred hired George Grace, Tommy's brother, to be his lawyer. So guess what? The bucks just fell into his hands.
Fred did manage to build thousands of good new homes, but he also made himself a fortune. When President Eisenhower found out about Trump's use of his initiative, he was furious.
The scandal was a national scandal.
A Senate committee was set up to investigate, and Fred was summoned to testify.
Michael D'Antonio.
People are dragged before this Senate hearing. One of the guys has a heart attack after testifying. It's televised, a lot of it. It's horrendous.
$4 million of government funds was found in Fred's bank account.
Which was not a good sign.
Fred Trump was called to testify and said, I didn't break any laws, and isn't this what American business is supposed to do? It's supposed to make money. In fact, he had not broken the law. He'd pushed it, shoved it, twisted it around, but he hadn't broken it.
This is a guy who's smart enough to see the seams. He can identify where he can exploit something and not break the law.
Somehow he talks his way out of trouble by claiming that the money was just resting in his bank account. The Senate hearings had tarnished Fred's reputation, and trouble was brewing at home as well. By now, Fred and Mary had five children to deal with, and one of them was beginning to rebel.
Donald was, in essence, a pretty bad kid. He was rough, violent with other kids, disrespectful, always disrupting the class and the school that he attended.
He eventually went too far when he and a classmate went into New York City, into Manhattan, bought some switchblade knives, and his father found the knife and said, "That's it, off to military school with you."
Trump in dress uniform.
Also at the New York Military Academy was Sandy McIntosh. He got to know the young Donald well.
I think that he and his father plotted together, perhaps, to form what we would call Donald's brand. When Donald's parents would come and visit him on the weekends, they always had a different girl visiting Donald. The girl was always dressed beautifully, right, in expensive clothes. In fact, to me, she looked like a model. Not a girl that I would know, but a model, someone who's, you know, professional somehow. So every week, it would be a different girl. This promenading with these girls got him voted as ladies' man. This is a military school where there's nothing but boys. So to be ladies' man is pretty difficult because girls weren't allowed there.
But Donald didn't pick up the award for the most popular student.
I think some kids thought that Donald was looking down at them, on them, that he had a superiority feeling about himself. But the difficulty I had with Donald was that I think there was a real emptiness inside him. And if you have no empathy, you're fit, as Shakespeare would say, for stratagems and spoils.
There was a mantra communicated to the Trump boys as they were growing up, and it came from their father. And he said, "You are killers, you are kings." And by that he meant, you are to be ruthless, you are to prevail, and you are to rule.
The Trump story is really a succession of Fredericks, from Frederick to Fred to Freddie, Fred's oldest son. Now, the plan was for Freddie to become the heir apparent, to run the real estate empire.
Freddie Trump was the Trump you would have loved to have known. This was a bright, engaging, funny guy. He loved to have fun. He partied. He would enjoy a beer, maybe two, maybe six. But he was someone that you would want to spend time with.
Freddie got given a task by his father to look after a tower block. And what did Freddie do? To make the place nice for the tenants, he decided to replace the windows. His hard-nosed father was horrified at his son's indulgence and lack of business sense.
And it proved to him that Freddie didn't have what it took. He wasn't good at it, he didn't enjoy it, and he didn't do a good job.
Freddie felt dejected, despondent, depressed. It wasn't what he wanted to do. He left. He became a pilot, which might have seemed like an achievement, but in the Trump household, it didn't seem to amount to much.
With Freddie becoming a pilot, Donald was the next in line. And he really did want to take charge of the multi-million dollar empire.
That I had a brother who was an extraordinary guy. He was an absolutely brilliant personality. He was handsome, he was wonderful, people loved him, he was nice, he confided to everybody. He was truly a nice human being, and people took advantage of him. And I saw what they did to my brother, and I didn't like it.
It is now the end of the 1960s, and Donald has completed his education, getting an economics degree from the Wharton School of Finance. And with Fred's reputation now tarnished by a series of Senate hearings, it made sense for the young, blue-eyed Donald to take the reins of the company.
Ultimately, it'll also prove, I feel, to be the most successful convention.
He was made president at just 25, and while he talked, his father watched and took notes.
Fred eyeing Donald carefully.
Ultimately, it'll also... Donald Trump then met someone who would become his closest advisor.
I think one of the most striking things about Donald's life is that at the age of 28,
he meets Roy Cohn. And anybody else who would meet Roy Cohn in that time frame would be repulsed. I knew Roy Cohn. He was the most repulsive figure I ever met in my life. I'd sit at lunches with Roy Cohn and feel like I was in the presence of Satan.
Cohn's steely gaze.
This man was reptilian. He would eat with his fingers. He had frogs all over his house in Greenwich Village. Godfathers of all five crime families were represented by him. And he was gay, and he was the most anti-gay guy you could find in New York. Young Donald Trump meets this guy and says, I gotta have him. I gotta have him.
Donald Trump now has a consigliere who isn't family, although he's treated as if he is.
Roy Cohn is the second most influential person after Fred, and I think it's a very close contest.
Cohn is put to work defending the latest family scandal.
Trump Village West.
For years, there were rumors that the Trumps were refusing to rent apartments here in Trump Village to blacks or Hispanics. And in the early 1970s, the Justice Department in Washington actually began to investigate.
Running that investigation was a 27-year-old Elise Goldweber.
I was very inexperienced, and I didn't know very much about the Trumps, except I knew that they were a well-to-do, very rich real estate family in New York.
They sent in what they called testers, undercover applicants with exactly the same credentials and references. The only difference, the color of their skin.
What the testers showed is that there were no apartments for black people, and there were apartments for white people. I felt that it was very clear that they had violated the law.
Elise's department sued the Trump Organization for violation of the Federal Fair Housing Act of 1968. Roy Cohn said the Trumps were being persecuted by the government, and he countersued for $100 million.
It was astounding. So that sort of don't back down, counterpunch style that we know from Donald Trump now, Roy Cohn was the master of that.
And so the case went to court.
When I took Donald's deposition, whether you asked him a question or not, he's never stayed on theme. You had to constantly bring him back. And then, you know, we had coffee and some snacks to eat in between the deposition. And he came up to me during, you know, a 10-minute break, and he goes, now, Elise, you don't want to live with them either. And I mean, I found that to be an unbelievably shocking statement. Bad. Creepy.
After 2 years, a settlement was agreed, and the Trumps had to provide a weekly list of all the available tenancies to the Justice Department's housing center, ensuring that no racial bias continued.
And although most people are describing it as a defeat, in trademark style, he claims it is a huge victory, and he's now free to set his sights on his next challenge, Manhattan.
A young Donald Trump looking out of the window of a private aircraft as it passes by the Twin Towers. He peers down at Manhattan, then purses his lips, his face illuminated in the early evening sun. A nighttime ferry passing the Statue of Liberty, then Matt standing by the Brooklyn Bridge, looking out over Manhattan.
So Donald Trump is only in his 20s, but for him, even at that tender age, that there is the big prize. Manhattan real estate. Now, his father, Fred, never moved the empire from this side of the East River to that side. But Donald was determined to conquer Manhattan, the island where his grandfather had arrived all those years earlier. But it wasn't going to be easy.
Journalist George Rush.
Donald always had this antipathy for old money in New York. They always looked down their nose at Donald, and he didn't care. I mean, he was kind of a punk rocker among the circle.
Donald Trump, A tough man in a tough city.
Steve, you're going to have to start pushing these people now a little bit because it's getting a little ridiculous as far as I'm concerned.
As Donald made his plans for Manhattan, he always had his father steering him. But his father's advice was more than just business. It was a way of viewing the world.
Fred instilled in his family this idea, I don't want to say a master race, but that there are certain people who are better looking and more successful, and that when they married, they created super children. And I think that Donald took that to heart.
And it's at this point in our story that the next extraordinary character enters the scene.
You don't need to have a master degree. You go to the hotel, you can be a maid. Next month, you can be a head of the housekeeping. And the year later, you can be looking for the job, which is your boss's job, because you have your, you know, you have to go up there and you have to try and you have to go and you have to protect your family, have a confidence, and just don't look at the past, just look in the future.
Ivana was a kind of female Donald. She was the perfect mate for him.
She poses for photos.
I think they shared a vision of a royal couple of New York.
Donald felt a strong connection with Ivana. He told his mother he'd found the woman he wanted to marry.
I knew he was seeing her. They came out here and we had a cup of tea. And that was when they announced that they would like to get married. And they had our blessing, of course. They had our blessing. Ivana was a nice girl.
Donald and Ivana had three children. Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric.
I think for a time, Donald may have been the happiest he's ever been in his domestic life.
They are the ultimate power couple, and together they feel that they can take on the world. They begin the construction of Trump Tower.
This is what he set out to conquer by plonking a massive tower on Fifth Avenue and putting his name in golden, supersized letters on the front door. Trump, I'm here. This is brash, this is sleazy. This is something that his neighbors in the Upper East Side on Fifth Avenue are turning their nose at.
And action, go.
Good, we eat our pizza the wrong way.
Crust first.
The studio photo of Trump with his siblings.
While Donald was the very public face of the family, away from the spotlight, his older brother Freddie's story couldn't be more different. Freddie also got married and had children, and for a while he worked as a pilot in Florida.
Gwenda Blair.
He eventually lost his job as a pilot, became a fishing boat captain, worked on boats, a very downwardly mobile trajectory.
He became chronically alcoholic. He lost his job. He wound up working in the maintenance crew for Trump buildings.
So while Donald was building Trump Tower and appearing on television, his older brother was working as a maintenance man in Trump-owned buildings. Ultimately, he drank himself to death.
I don't like to think too much about what happened with Fred. With Fred, it was an alcohol problem, and he was taken advantage of.
He didn't want to go into business anyway.
He didn't want to. You're absolutely right. He didn't want to. He should not have, and perhaps it was my fault and perhaps my father's fault for egging him on into business because he wasn't good at it because he didn't like the business.
And you also encouraged him to go into business?
I did.
Donald Trump confirmed this.
After Freddie's death, Donald appeared on chat shows talking about the power of genetics.
I'm a very, very strong believer in genes, and you know, to a point that maybe it doesn't even make sense, but I believe strongly that as you're born, you can certainly, environment can change things and can shape things, et cetera, et cetera. But I'd give 80-85% of it to the genes. If you have genes for whatever it is you're doing, you have an awfully big advantage.
It's a philosophy of life that humanity is divided into winners and losers. There's a natural selection. You're either selected by nature, by your DNA, as a winner or a loser. And Donald Trump sees himself very much as the winning embodiment of the Trump gene, whereas his older brother, Freddie, was quite the opposite.
In 1983, Trump Tower opened. And Donald wasn't the only one with ambition in their DNA.
She wanted a role in the business, wanted to participate in it. So she didn't show up at work sites in, overalls. She showed up in fashionable clothes and spike heels and wanted to be involved in every aspect of it. This was not what he had in mind.
I made a big mistake. I put Ivana into the business a little bit. And she did a very good job. And she ran the castle, and then she ran the plaza. And she did a nice job. But she'd come home every night. Here is how we are doing. We are doing this. We are doing that. It became like I'm married to a business partner.
In a way, it seemed as though Donald maybe had married the wrong parent. He was looking for his mother, someone who was supportive and, you know, homebody and taking care of that end of things. And he ended up marrying his father. He ended up marrying somebody who was very aggressive.
But Ivana was no longer the only woman in his life. Hidden away on a yacht called the Trump Princess was Marla Maples. For a while, Donald stayed with Ivana while secretly moving Marla around with him. But when he took them both on the same skiing holiday, Ivana and Marla bumped into each other. And not long after, Ivana demanded a divorce. But Ivana had signed a prenuptial agreement, and this wasn't just any old prenup.
The one that she was introduced to was drawn up by none other than Roy Cohn.
One draft of Roy Cohn's prenup even stipulated that Ivana would have to give up every single gift Donald had ever given her. She challenged the prenup.
Ivana fighting through a crowd of photographers.
Donald Trump and his wife Ivana are reported to be getting a divorce after 12 years of marriage, and there's a rumored other woman.
This matrimonial gladiator fight ensued.
Donald flanked by security.
Donald and Ivana would hurl fireballs through their lawyers to assign blame. You know, the media just could not get enough of this.
When this story exploded, as it did on the front pages of tabloid after tabloid, and television set after television set, Fred was troubled, and Mary was distraught.
While his parents were mortified by his marriage troubles, Donald had been coping in his own unique way.
He bought Mar-a-Lago, this fabled estate in Florida. He bought the world's sixth largest yacht. He bought a shuttle airline. He bought a football team.
Three casinos in Atlantic City, which was two more than anybody else had. Did I say the yacht? It's just an endless list.
Having been perhaps too similar to Ivana, he now settled down with a much less threatening mom.
He's very touching, very loving, and is not afraid to say, I love you, and give a hug, and I think that's very important.
She's a nice woman.
Donald and Marla had a child, Tiffany, and then got married. As Donald's life became a national soap opera, he started to wonder what he might do next with his fame.
You have said that if you ran for president, you'd win.
I think I'd have a very good chance. I mean, I like to win. When I do something, I like to win. I like to do well, and I think I probably would have a pretty good chance.
He did one television interview after another.
Could $1 billion buy the White House?
Money gives everybody an advantage, but you certainly can't buy anything.
You can see him learning to master and control the media.
Do you see foreign policy in terms of dollars and cents?
Obviously, you see foreign policy in many lights, but dollars and cents is obviously a very important part of it.
He tries out various opinions.
Two presidents and even three presidents have been discredited because of Iran, and I would stop that immediately. You go and you take over the oil and let them have the rest of their country. We just want the oil. But that doesn't matter because I'm not running for office.
Donald with Marla.
His marriage to Marla Maples didn't last. This coincided with his businesses failing too. His three casinos, the castle, the plaza, and the Taj Mahal all went bust. And he filed for bankruptcy. Now things are getting a little darker for Donald Trump. In 1999, Fred Trump, a towering figure in Donald's life, his main advisor, his inspiration, dies. Just a year later, Donald's mother, Mary, also died at the age of 88. But Donald bounced back. His business has recovered. And the family tree continued to grow. In 2005, he married his third wife, Melania. She's another immigrant success story, having grown up in an apartment block in Slovenia. Now she's first lady.
A steam train.
When you look at the Trump family story, you start to see patterns. An immigrant who ran bars and brothels in the gold rush. A mother who arrived in America with nothing. A father who built a housing empire on the edge of the law. Success, lack of moral qualms. And while Donald boasts and brags, under the surface, reality is more brittle. The Trumps themselves believe in the supreme power of their genes.
The Donald, however, was quick to turn the attention back to himself and his family, especially his 9-month-old son, Barron.
He's strong, he's smart, he's tough, he's vicious, he's violent. All of the ingredients you need to be an entrepreneur. And most importantly, hopefully, he's smart.
Election night.
Thank you. I love this country. Thank you. Thank you very much.